Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for Tuesday, November 1st, 2016. The time right now is 7:03 p.m. Ms. Moot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cuddeback, Hanford, Rasmussen, and that's it. The most important.
Councilmember Gamble had reported last week that he would not be here. I don't recall Councilmember Davis or Councilmember Camp indicating that they wouldn't be here. We'll go ahead and consider Councilmember Gamble as being excused, unless there's objection. And go ahead and open the agenda when the other two come in. Councilmember Cuddeback, will you please lead us in the pledge? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on the agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is the first item, AB 16145, presentation on the downtown revitalization strategy. We have a Mr. Brian Smith from BDS Planning here to give the presentation. Mr. Smith.
Mr. Mayor, council members, I'm Brian Scott. I'm the principal of BDS Planning and Urban Design. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your agenda with me this evening. I have a few slides and want to report on a downtown revitalization strategy we've been working on for the last 6 months or so with a lot of the important stakeholders in downtown Monroe. Just by way of background, my history is... I got to figure out how to turn this thing. My story is I grew up in Portland, and in the 1970s I got incensed with the berry fields out around the edges of the Portland area getting ground up for subdivisions, and got this notion that if we could make cities better, maybe people wouldn't be in such a hurry to grind up the countryside. And I've been working on that ever since. I've been doing downtown revitalization and neighborhood commercial district revitalization work for more than 35 years. This map shows communities that I've worked in that time across Washington and Oregon. My firm does visions and strategic plans. We do a lot of consensus facilitation. We create assessment districts to pay for downtown revitalization, and a lot of organization development work. In my experience, successful downtown revitalization and sustainable practices require, first of all, economic fundamentals, really understanding the basic underpinnings of the economics of the community and making decisions based on economic fundamentals. It also requires design and development principles to make the downtown as pleasant a place as it can be, to spend time and also to be able to get into and get out of and circulate effectively. It requires sustained marketing and promotions to create the best image for the downtown, repair any bad reputation, and promote that and bring people together. But more than any of these fundamental points, it requires strong leadership and consistent management to make things work over time. And in my experience, it's building organizational capacity and long-term sustainability that are often overlooked as the most important ingredient of a successful downtown revitalization strategy. And this strategy I'm presenting tonight focuses primarily on that point. We've been through a process since May where we've had several meetings of a steering committee. I've done a couple of dozen interviews with key stakeholders in the downtown and with the city and surrounding entities. We did an online community survey. We've looked at all of the past plans for downtown and looked at those various things. And then we had a joint meeting of the Downtown Monroe Association Board of Directors and the Monroe Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors to work on the joint roles of those organizations, and then I've been out meeting with folks about this strategy. So we've done quite a lot of work, and we're right at the tail end of this process, making this presentation. Our final report will be out in a few weeks. So in a nutshell, our key strategies are 4 points. the coordinated roles and responsibilities for the key entities that are important to downtown Monroe. That means the Downtown Monroe Association, the City of Monroe, and the Monroe Chamber of Commerce. The organizational imperatives for the Downtown Monroe Association, what they should be doing to move their programs forward. A four-year strategy towards sustainable funding for ongoing downtown programs, and a three-pronged destination marketing strategy that all those entities should play into. Perhaps most important on this is getting the relative role straight of the Chamber of Commerce, the Downtown Monroe Association, the City of Monroe. Here you can see in action is trying to get those roles straight at our joint meeting of the two boards and trying to get all that together. We had a lot of fun. But my sense is this little diagram on the right where there's an overlapping roles for the City of Monroe, the DMA, and the Chamber is really critical that everybody's working together on making downtown happen. The city has its basic functions that are essential to the vitality of downtown Monroe, the public infrastructure, code enforcement, and basic city services. The Downtown Monroe Association can work on creating a destination district in the downtown and making it a great place to be and hang out and do business. They can focus on placemaking and design, and they can focus on sustainable funding for their own organization. The Chamber of Commerce should continue the very good work it's doing on destination marketing citywide and promoting Monroe as a great place to come and be, as well as their efforts at education and networking. But you see a lot of overlap between these organizations, and the Chamber and the DMA should be working together. They should both be recruiting members in the downtown. Businesses and property owners in the downtown should be members of both the Chamber and the DMA because both are working in their interests. Both should be working on good communication with each other and with everybody else. Both should be working on marketing for and with Hispanic businesses, which are one of the real treasures in downtown Monroe. They should both be promoting the Sky to Sound water trail that Snohomish County is working on, which I think is a great opportunity for Monroe. And they should both be doing advocacy for downtown Monroe. And then there's a role for all three, the city, the chamber, and the DMA, related to the lodging tax. And I'll touch on that in a moment. The organizational needs or imperatives for the Downtown Monroe Association are several. First of all, they've got to have a straight story about who they're serving. And they've had a loose definition of serving a couple of blocks on each side of the corner of Lewis and Main. The city has this boundary that's on this map here that is the historic Main district in the downtown plan. I think the DMA and the city should both agree that that's the boundary of the historic downtown core, and I'm recommending to the DMA that they adopt that as their boundary so it syncs up with the city's boundary and doesn't confuse everybody. I think it is essential for the Downtown Monroe Association to actively participate in the Washington State Main Street program. The Main Street program emerged in the 1970s as an initiative of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It started as an experiment in three Midwestern communities to try and figure out what could they do to actually make the downtowns viable, which would be good for their historic buildings if they could. It grew to a demonstration in six states, and it has grown over the last 40 years to be active in all 50 states. It's been active in Washington since the mid-80s. I had the opportunity to run the Oregon Main Street program for about 15 years and work closely with the Washington Main Street program many times. This is an essential network that can, it's just full of communities just like Monroe who are encountering the very same problems. I think it's essential that the DMA get very involved in that because of the training benefits, the networking benefits, and there are some potential funding benefits, a B&O tax credit that's available. But the reason to get involved in Main Street primarily is for the networking and the training that's there so you can learn from other communities and share those resources. I also think it's essential that the Downtown Monroe Association hire an executive director, at least a part-time executive director, to help coordinate their efforts. Their accomplishments in the last 15 months or so since they formed as an all-volunteer group are nothing short of astonishing. They have a three-page, single-space list of all the things they've gotten done. It is very impressive. They can't sustain that as an all-volunteer organization, basically paying for it out of their own pockets. They need to become a real organization. Association with some staffing to do that. They should focus on their activities on some quick wins. Before I got here, they had developed a plan of action for the next year. It's a really good plan of action. They should pursue the activities that are there. I focused on the organizational comments because I didn't think I had that much to add to their plan. And they need to develop a sustainable funding model, which I'm going to describe next because it involves the city. My recommendation is that the City of Monroe dedicate some funding to the Downtown Monroe Association for the next 3 years in the scale of $25,000 a year for 3 years, with the expectation that by the end of that 3 years, the Downtown Monroe Association will have created a mechanism to let that back off to a lower level so that they're not just dependent on the city for their operations. So in the current year, their budget was about $3,500, pretty much paid out of the own pocket, the pockets of the folks doing the work, which has been is just completely admirable and wonderful, but it's not sustainable and it's not enough. So I would recommend that in 2017, the city make this contribution. They also have already applied for a utility grant for some street lighting. I recommend that they apply to the, in future years, they apply for the lodging tax for projects, and that they raise some individual donations and some memberships beyond what they're doing right now. And then in 2018, I think they should work on, they should add the lodging tax for some projects. Too late for next year, but for 2018, they should add the lodging to that for project work. 2019, it should grow a little bit. And by 2020, I think they should create an assessment district on businesses and or properties in downtown Monroe to pay for sustainable funding for these programs. They should not do that next year. They shouldn't even work on it next year. For the next 2 years, they should focus on getting some stuff done to build a track record, but they should look for that long-term sustainable funding from the folks that most benefit from that, which would then allow the city's contribution to back off in those later years. And I would say when the city makes this support, which I strongly recommend, you shouldn't just see it as you're giving them some money to do whatever they want. You should have some specific requirements. I would say they must participate actively as a full member of the Washington Main Street program. I would say they must hire at least a half-time executive director, because 40 years of Main Street experience says this stuff works better if you have a paid coordinator to coordinate all the volunteer effort. And I think the city can also ask for some specific deliverables for things that you want to see. So you know, as the city council, you're getting a return on your investment. And you should expect specific deliverables each year. What's that money going to go for? In the current year, the budget would be about half for this half-time executive director and about half for operations and specific projects, mostly the director and projects. Over the next couple of years, with the lodging tax addition, the project work would go up. I would say in the third year, their primary focus will be building their long-term sustainable funding. Projects may back off a little bit while they're really focused on their long-term future. And then in the fourth year, 2020, they would have this assessment district in place. They could probably expand to a full-time executive director and get much more project work doing, getting work done. Following the 4 points of the Main Street approach, I would say in the next couple of years, their funding would be about equally split between organizational development, promotions, design, and economic restructuring. As you move into the later years, the work on promotions, design, and economic restructuring could grow with funding, while organization can stay at a constant level because it's basically just operating the organization. So partly, what are we going to do with that activity? The three-pronged destination marketing strategy is my last point of this recommendation. I think first, Monroe is in a great, Monroe is a beautiful little town, and you have, you know, the most imageable, delightful thing going on in Monroe is this downtown you've got. And if you want visitors to come here and spend money, the best asset you have is that downtown. And so working on positioning Monroe as a destination amongst the various regional attractions here is, I think, is a great opportunity. And a key element of that is this Sky to Sound Water Trail. The Snohomish County is really motivated on. They have resources to help. I think you should catch into that and build on it. The second is promoting downtown as a visitor district. That means everything about the visitor to be here. First, you got to promote it. Come to Monroe. It's a great place. But then you got to make sure that when they get here, it's what you said, and it's a great experience when you're here. And so that is a key focus, and I think that's a place where the chamber and the DMA can kind of split their responsibilities. You have the chamber saying, come to Monroe. This is a great place. And then come to our downtown. It's a wonderful thing. And the DMA is working to make sure that when they get there, it is a great place and they have a great experience. And then you need to set Monroe apart and make it unique. And one of the things you have going for you already that distinguishes you from nearby communities is the Hispanic businesses you already have in the downtown. The percentage of the Monroe population that identifies as Hispanic or Latino is like double Snohomish County, and more than the communities around you. You have more of those businesses. And I think, frankly, it's the most interesting thing you've got going in terms of the businesses that are downtown. That should be celebrated by the DMA, by the chamber, and by the city as a great asset. I want to touch on each of those things a little more deeply. The Sky to Sound Water Trail is an initiative of the Snohomish County Parks and Recreation. It's an 84-mile water trail with Monroe kind of right in the middle of it, which is a great thing. It's from the Wild Sky Wilderness Area to the Puget Sound, and it directly interacts with 10 communities, and Monroe is envisioned as one of the places where you would get into the water and get out of the water as you're going in there. So it's a great opportunity for people that are either starting or ending their trip here, or also just stopping on the trip and walking up from the landing up into the downtown to have a great experience. So I think that's a great thing that you should jump on. Downtown is a visitor district means this is really the DMA's primary work plan, is they want to develop the visitor experience so when you get off the boat or pull in your car, everything that you see is a wonderful experience. That means you have great businesses in the downtown, you have physical improvements, and you work on placemaking, things that make it a more imageable place, a place that works better. You've done some great things. The sidewalk improvements that are out there are great. When this business put these tables out here this summer and started serving, it just changed the whole feeling of the whole street. It was just great. And there was, the city made a great investment, and then that business made a pretty small investment, but it really changed the whole character. And so I think you want to really, DMA should be working to promote that as well as the city. And then on the Hispanic and Latino business marketing, you've got 20% of your community identifies as Hispanic or Latino. Like I say, double Snohomish County. You want to really market Monroe as a destination for these businesses and celebrate that heritage. The chamber should be hosting culturally appropriate events. The DMA should be doing design and placemaking activities to celebrate Monroe's diversity and be inclusive of those businesses to pull those things forward. To me, the upside for downtown Monroe is just huge. You have beautiful historic buildings. You have the nascent core of some businesses that you can build on. I think the potential to make this a greater destination and really build on the community will work very well. So in summary, my recommendations are coordinated roles and responsibilities for the downtown, for the city, the DMA, and the chamber. Organizational imperatives for the Downtown Monroe Association, getting a staffed program with a solid work plan, a four-year strategy for sustainable funding, and a three-pronged destination marketing strategy. So there's my bit. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you like.
Thank you very much. Please let the record show that Councilmember Davis entered chambers at 7:05 p.m. And Ms. Forth, did you want to come up and say anything on behalf of the DMA?
It's been a conversation with Brian and the chamber. The chamber president, Mike Reese, and I meet about every 4 to 6 weeks and just have a conversation. We've been on the same page since day one. We want the same things for downtown. I can tell you, as a volunteer for these past 14 plus months, the workload is daunting. We are a complete volunteer group, and it's difficult to do it, and I can't see a complete volunteer group being able to carry on this scope of work, especially moving it in the sphere that Brian's talking about, without some additional help, and it's going to have to be paid help. Mm-hmm. Somebody that we can count on to take care of all the pieces that fall on just a couple of people. So I appreciate everything that the city has done so far as having BDS as a consultant, and it's been great, and we've learned a tremendous amount. So, unless you have any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Scott, come on back up. Thank you very much, Diane. Councilmember Cuddeback.
I don't have any questions at this time, but I wanted to thank Diane and Aaron. I know you guys are both here, and just the work that you've done over the last year has been amazing, as was mentioned earlier, and as a volunteer organization and taking the lead and helping drive this, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Actually, a couple quick questions. On the strategic direction and funding sources that were mentioned, let me back up. The map of the corridor for the downtown you mentioned, off the top of your head, about how many businesses are within that corridor?
Have not made any attempt to count. I'm going to guess maybe 50 street-level businesses and probably quite a few more on the upper floors, but that's a wild guess.
Okay. And then the memberships that you mentioned in the strategic direction and funding sources page, under membership. Now, memberships are voluntary, just like a chamber membership.
Yep.
Or whatever. Okay.
I was thinking something, as we were looking it through, something like 15 or 20 businesses at $100 or $150, something mm-hmm. like that. It's not a huge number in that budget, but I think it's important that people are, mm-hmm. and it grow over time.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to echo what Councilmember Cuddeback said. Ladies, thank you for your work, and that's very much appreciated. We've talked as council about downtown wanting to help and do what we can, and so it's nice to see a plan and have it all laid out. And so I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've already budgeted in the 2017 budget.
Correct. The preliminary budget includes $25,000 for DMA. Yes.
Perfect. That's what I thought, but there were so many numbers when I read that last. So
yes. We based that on sort of draft or preliminary feedback from BDS when we're putting together the budget.
Okay. Thank you.
And I, too, am going to echo what Councilmember Cuddeback and Hanford and the other council members, I'm sure, are also feeling. There's been an enormous amount of work in our downtown over the last couple years, and there's been a lot. One of the things that we talked about was that we provide infrastructure. We, like you said, a clean and safe place and good infrastructure, and it comes to the businesses and the residents and other organizations to sort of program that space and help bring about improvements to the downtown businesses. And the DMA, Diane, Aaron, and anybody else that's out there that I'm just missing right now, you all have been very, very busy, very effective in bringing about change in the downtown, and I really appreciate that. And I also thank our Chamber of Commerce for the work that they've been doing. I know the Chamber of Commerce has historically taken on a very strong lead role in the downtown, and as your report points out, Brian, this is an opportunity for the Chamber also to allow have another organization focus just on the downtown while they open up to a broader way of marketing our community, which I think is really cool, a really cool opportunity also. So anyway, I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
I have one more question.
Yep. Councilmember Cuddeback, yeah.
Just one more. Did any, in all your discussion and the work that you did anything come up about the Cinco de Mayo event that used to be held in Monroe, I think back in the late 1990s and early 2000s, because it was a big community event that went kind of by the wayside, I think, because it lost ownership.
Jackie mentioned a joint meeting with Chamber, and Chamber Vaughn tentatively expressed interest in
providing. Yeah.
I think that the Chamber is doing, I think, a job to be praised, mm-hmm. of trying to target. They did bring up Cinco de Mayo, and I can't quite recall, but I know we talked about it.
Yeah.
But they're trying to identify a finite number of events that they can do well,
right,
and not try and do just a ton of events,
right,
in a mediocre mm-hmm. way. And I think that they should be encouraged to go that direction, to do a handful of events really well.
Right. Well, I know it was an extremely popular event, and I've actually had community members approach me in the last probably 5 months saying, we should bring this back, and they're not actively involved in the downtown core. They just know that would be a great community event that could bring our community together and focus on the businesses and what makes downtown Monroe different. So
this past year, we focused a lot on building relationships with businesses and,
right,
and property. There was a fair amount of, I don't want to say distrust, but they weren't quite certain we were going to walk the talk. And things have really turned around nicely, and we've spoken to a couple of the Hispanic business owners, and I still see a little reticence, but I also see they believe that we're going to do it and say we're going to do it. And we're not trying to do more than we can do.
Right.
That's been a really important piece.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, the next item that we have on the agenda is also under announcements and presentations. This is the second one. This is a presentation from the Snohomish Health District, and I believe that we've got the Deputy Director and Chief Operating Officer, Peter Mayer, here. Thank you very much for coming back.
Council for the opportunity. Pete Mayer, Deputy Director and Chief Operating Officer for the Snohomish Health District. And with me tonight is Jeff Ketchel, our Environmental Health Director, and Heather Thomas, our Government and Public Affairs Manager. And we're going to kind of tag team very brief presentation. Materials are coming around to you for your information. Jeff's going to start us out with a little bit of background. I'll jump into some of the financial details, and Heather will finish us out on some of the things that we're doing from a statewide perspective. So, Jeff.
Thanks, Pete. So, good evening, Council. So, before I jump into the presentation part, I wanted to update the Council on something that just happened today, public health-wise, in Snohomish County. There's a fact sheet going around right now about something called acute flaccid myelitis, or AFM. It's a disease that affects the muscles, specifically the limbs, and sometimes the breathing muscles. In people, most likely in children. In 2014, we had 2 cases in Washington. In 2015, we had none. And so far this year, we've had 9. And we just learned today that one of those cases was in a Snohomish County child. Of those 9 cases, 3 are currently hospitalized, and unfortunately, 1 has passed away. We're working closely with Public Health Seattle King County, State Department of Health, Centers for Disease Control, and Seattle Children's Hospitals to try to find the connections and possible causes of this disease. So you'll probably see some things in the news about this, probably tomorrow or the next day, and let you know that Snohomish Health District is working on, very hard on this. The 9 cases are spread around 5 counties, and the children are ages 3 to 14. So let's jump into the presentation here. This is the clicker. All right. Prevention and outbreak response. This is the ideal state, where we, the Snohomish Health District is adequately staffed to work on prevention and outbreaks at the same time, where we're constantly looking at the things that can cause premature death, illness, and injury in our communities and working to prevent it. And when the outbreak does happen, we're able to effectively respond. Unfortunately, this is where we are right now. The balance is definitely swung to the outbreak side. So what does prevention really mean? Prevention means inspections of things like swimming pools and restaurants, working with schools to ensure immunization rates, working to get create systems with cities so more people are walking, biking, avoiding tobacco in, tobacco to prevent the chronic diseases, or preventing injuries such as opioid poisonings. Some new research just came out today that over the past 15 years, the number of children accidentally poisoned by opioids has doubled in the United States. And this goes along with what we've seen in our local community here as well. And so we're currently working on a lot of outbreak responses, whether it's opioids, salmonella. We've had some Costco chicken salmonella outbreak recently, whether it's been whooping cough or even syphilis and other sexually transmitted diseases. From this time last year to this time this year, the number of syphilis cases in Snohomish County has more than doubled. And gonorrhea and chlamydia rates are up as well. And so as our ability to prevent these illnesses and injuries wanes, we're going to be spending more and more time on outbreak response, and we'll see more illness, injury, and premature death in Snohomish County. So that being said, continue the happy presentation with Pete.
Thanks, Jeff. So as you can imagine, our capacity and capability to address the issues that Jeff just noted is significantly diminished, and it's diminished over time. This isn't a new phenomenon, but since 2005, we've seen a significant decrease in our funding, 22% to be precise. And that is continued to present day. Since the peak of staffing in 2008, we've eliminated 74 FTE in our current budget. In order to bring a balanced budget forward to our Board of Health, we are standing to eliminate 18.8 FTE in the 17 budget in order to balance. Ultimately, we are one of the worst counties in the state in terms of its investment in local public health. We rank 34 out of 35 local health jurisdictions on a per capita basis. So you might ask, well, where does all the funding come from? It's really a mix between federal sources, state, county, locally generated fees and revenues. The challenge that we have, in addition to decreasing funding, both we see that at the federal level, we see it at the state level, we're seeing it at the local level, but also what we're seeing is a significant increase in the restricted nature of the funds that we do receive. The categorical nature of those funds limit our capacity and capability to work across a number of arenas to really address public health at the local level. So as you can imagine in your own city budget, that the declining general fund challenges that you have, or the stress on the general fund, which is one of your most flexible sources of funding, similar to the health district, we're seeing a significant decrease in those flexible dollars. And that's a major concern for us. As you can see from this pie chart, we heavily rely on state and federal grant dollars. This is the 2016 budget, just over $3.8 million. And you can see next we rely on licenses and permits, fee revenue that we generate. This is self-generated revenues, largely through environmental health for the activities of septic permitting, food inspections, and the like. And then you can see we then rely on state discretionary funds, and this again is where we've seen the biggest decrease is in those flexible dollars. And then on you can see the county contribution and some of the other contract revenue that we have. We try to identify some opportunities where we think we can develop maybe perhaps a stronger relationship with the city of Monroe and with the other cities that we serve. And with a $2 per capita contribution, we have an opportunity to really establish an ongoing relationship to meet some of your most pressing needs or concerns relative to public health. We've identified a few examples here, whether that's working on trauma-informed practices and opportunities, working with the Monroe School District, whether that might be working with nuisance properties and some of the homeless encampment issues that you might be experiencing, as well as other local planning issues. You just heard a presentation on your downtown revitalization. Public health can play a great role in helping identify safe routes, good use of public space for active activity and gathering. That's a role that we can play, particularly with collection of data and information, as well as policy guidance on how to put that into practice. And as I mentioned on the data and assessment, that is a key role of public health, to be able to provide an assessment of the community's health, and that's what we would purport to engage the City of Monroe, in a greater degree, is really trying to get a better understanding of what some of the issues are in your community and how we then can collaborate to improve those circumstances. So a question has been raised, well, how does our contribution assist us, assist the health district given its challenge? And as I mentioned, in order to balance our budget, the board will be considering the potential elimination of 18.8 FTE. Now, we're having ongoing conversations and discussions with our budget ad hoc committee. The board will be considering a preliminary budget at their meeting next week. But some of our challenges here, we've never adequately addressed our capital needs. We own, the district owns the Rucker Building in downtown Everett. We have not invested in the repairs and improvements of that facility over time. And as you can imagine, whether it's your roads or your parks or your city facilities, if you're not adequately addressing those heating, ventilation, air conditioning issues, fixtures and furnishings in your building, all those things that it takes to maintain infrastructure, you're going to have really significant issues. And that is coming home to roost. And so we have over $4 million in capital repair and improvements that have been identified that are necessary to really maximize the Rucker Building. Now, we also are considering, in light of those improvements, considering maybe downsizing and perhaps even selling the facility, the building, and looking for space that more adequately serves the needs of the health district since our significant decrease in staff. So those are some of the things that we're really challenged with, but we're exploring to be as efficient and effective as we can in the period of dwindling resources. So when it comes to contributions, we've run a number of scenarios at whether all the cities participate or half the cities contribute, and the county contributes at a full $2 per capita across the entire county to some other variation. So you can see some numbers here, and essentially the takeaway here is it bends the curve in terms of our fund balance. Bottom line, in that we're able to continue to deliver services for a little greater period of time than we would be able otherwise. And what's at stake here is our capacity and capability to meet a lot of the needs and issues that Jeff noted earlier. So this is really about trying to extend our opportunity to have the capacity to meet your needs and those of the other communities of Snohomish County. Now, with that, we are also working very hard with the state legislature. We will be going to the state legislature in 2017. I'm going to have Heather Thomas come up and share a little bit about an initiative that we're going forward with there, because we recognize this is not only a city, county responsibility, but also a state responsibility. So, Heather.
Again, Heather Thomas, Public and Government Affairs Manager. As Pete mentioned, we see this as a shared responsibility. So protecting the federal dollars that we do get, as well as protecting the state dollars, and then looking for sustainable local funding. So you'll see a material coming out in the near future on our ask in 2017. And it's really establishing that public health is essential. Just like any other public safety services, fire, police, public health is also an essential service that needs to be provided in every community across the state. And at the state level, we're looking at these foundational public health services. So if you look inside the orangish-reddish wedges, these are the core services. So communicable disease and chronic disease, like Jeff talked about, these are our response capabilities and prevention, maternal child health, access to clinical care, environmental public health and vital records. These are services. And then the band on the outside are capabilities that help support each of those functions. So you'll see assessment and epidemiology, like Pete mentioned, policy development and support. So these are things like the vaping ordinance that was passed last year and the drug take-back secure medicine return ordinance that was passed this year, as well as communications, instances like ASM, obviously we've been reaching out to the schools today to give them information that they can convey onto their families and staff members on if there's questions about ASM in the school district, is it contagious, what's being done. So anytime an episode or a response takes that capacity, there's a strain on communications on our website, along with emergency preparedness and response. So we are very active in the OSO slide. Community partnership development, and then business competencies, so human relations, IT infrastructure, and so forth. So these are the core services that need to be provided in any county, regardless of size. So Snohomish County to Wakayakum County, those need to be provided and funded. And we're looking to the state to pay for a down payment to fund those services and programs. The shaded area are, there are also unique services and programs and needs at the county level. So what Snohomish County may need might be different than what Benton, Franklin, or Ferry County need. And so that's really looking to the local areas for the support for those services or programs that are unique to their communities. So that's very similar to what we're asking with the per capita. There are issues that are unique to Monroe that we can help you with, and that's what we're looking for the per capita, is to help meet those local needs as we move forward to the state ask. We handed around a two-page leave behind. This is what's going to legislators, or at least a current draft. There is a biennium ask that $50 million would be allocated to local health departments across the state. This is over 2 years, so about $25 million per year for LHJs, or local health jurisdictions. And those would help fund those critical gaps in the red wedges that I talked about, as well as the blue bands on the outside. And then $6 million would be going to the State Department of Health to help with some of their infrastructure needs. And then $4 million, so $2 million per year, would go towards modernization. So we're looking at ways that we can either share services similar to trauma levels, like at a hospital. Maybe there's opportunities at the region level or West Coast versus, or Western Washington and Eastern Washington, that we can share services that maybe not every county needs to fully staff up, but we can leverage and shift those back and forth. So there's some opportunities to pilot that in the next couple years and look at how we can make that agency and system-wide. So that's the initial step of what we're looking for in the ask. You'll see a lot more moving into December, January, February as the legislature kicks off its session, and we'll be briefing the board some more about that next week. So with that, we're available for questions and discussion.
Council members, do you have any questions or comments? Council member Cutterback.
Thank you. I don't know who best to answer this, but so tell me a little bit more about, you briefly talked about next year's budget and you're doing a preliminary budget. So if you don't get the funding, and I know you had different options up there, whether you get partial funding from the cities or full, what are some consequences if you don't get that? I heard you mention some FTEs, but could you go into a little bit more detail about that?
I'll take a first stab at it. So as Pete mentioned, we're currently working with our budget ad hoc committee in order to develop a balanced operating budget that was eliminating 18-point FTE.
Okay.
So that is across the board. It impacts every division and just about every program in the agency. Most significantly, it's eliminating our First Steps program in the county, reducing our WIC services. It eliminates policy work. So again, as I mentioned, the vaping and secure medicine take back. It would also reduce in the food safety program. It would eliminate or significantly decrease our child care outreach program. So we serve 17,000 kids are in child care in the county. It's a lot of health and safety work, as well as behavioral health specialists and working with the care providers, not direct one-on-one with the kids, but helping to make sure that the providers are providing safe and healthy environments for the children. And it also eliminates an epidemiologist, so to the data and surveillance piece. And those are the bulks of the program. So it's really working with, so, and again, that's a base operating budget.
Sure.
If they want to go into reserves is an option that depletes our savings account, so to speak.
And so we're having those discussions with the budget ad hoc on what they might want to restore and what they might want to take from the reserves in order to do that. And we're also looking at it as somewhat of a bridge as we hopefully get that partial payment towards from the state. But it's coming at it from little pieces. We really see it as a shared investment. So what would that mean for Monroe if the funding wasn't here? It would mean we'd have decreased capacity. So Monroe's been very familiar with the work that we've been doing lately. We had the Montessori school recently, which took 20 to 30 staff members over the course of 2 weeks. I think we calculated it was about $30,000 or $40,000 that we expended. But it's not just the health district. It's also the families that had to have their kids out of daycare. Sky Valley, any of these examples. So we have the capacity right now to take that on. If we were eliminating our child care outreach, eliminating policy and environmental health program, that would limit our capacity and our response.
And what are you asking the county to do? Anything different next year in this funding budget cycle? What's the county's role? I mean, I know they were the primary funding source, but what are you asking for them next year?
We've asked for the same $2 per capita,
okay.
And it's our understanding that they'll be doing the $2 for unincorporated counties.
Okay.
So, and that's part of the reason why we posed the resolution that was sent out to all of you in the last week or two. We started drafting interlocal agreements, but because they'll be customized for each agency, rather than starting down that process, we needed to gauge where agencies are at for the $1, $2, zero, before we burned a bunch of time. And also trying to find out what makes sense for you. We made some recommendations on the slide of, here's some thoughts we have, but really what would be the most help for Monroe, was trying to reestablish a relationship with you guys.
Let me just add to that. The county council hasn't released their budget.
Right.
Obviously, the county executive has shared his, and the county council is working on their response to that, so we won't know until we know. What we understand is there's an intention to fund, as Heather said, the unincorporated area of the county. We take that as a very supportive sign, and we'll know in the next week or two when the county council releases their budget.
And then one last question about mental health issues. You know, that's obviously been an area where more funding has become available and the state's funding more. Do you guys get a share of any of that?
Not directly. We get pieces of it in different places. A lot of it's geared towards our maternal child's health. So we have the block grants, which are geared towards parent and pregnant women, and making sure that they can help the families get off to the best start possible. We've also partnered with Snohomish County Human Services to do events like the Mental Wellness Fair last year. As Pete talked about, the trauma-informed care, we've been working with school districts, so looking at if there's some grant opportunities moving forward. But as far as direct mental health funding, we don't receive that anymore. We did get a portion through the chemical dependency and mental health sales tax through the county, but as of 2017, that will be eliminated for us.
You know, I will say structurally across the state, we're pursuing integration of behavioral health and physical health by 2020.
Yes. Okay.
And so you can imagine, as behavioral health organizations begin to get framed up, there's significant change in the mental and behavioral health world right now. So we don't know what that future vision looks like. I think our collective hope is that there's greater integration mm-hmm. between the mental and behavioral health pieces and the physical health, and that's where we can kind of dial in that regard.
Okay. Just a comment. I my first couple of years on council, I sat on the Board of Health and represented Monroe, so I know firsthand the work that you guys do and how important it is to Monroe and to the county. So I'm supportive of looking at some option and do our share and participate. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Heather, Peter, Jeff, this chart here, this is the scenarios that you provided are just if or how much cities contribute in 2017, right? It doesn't continue on each year.
So we've been holding off updating that chart. It was based off our 2016 budget, which was 6-year forecast, as is. So as Pete mentioned, we're looking at our capital investments. Do we continue? It was predicated on the full $4 million capital investment. Do we still make that investment? Do we make a smaller Band-Aid capital improvement plan? And then also with layoffs, so are there less employment costs? Do we have to pay unemployment if we're laying people off? So before we started adjusting that too much, we've tried to at least get a preliminary budget. But yes, those were the scenarios, looking at our reserves in a six-year forecast at the different per capita funding.
Okay.
Per year.
So obviously that those curves are going to change if cities contribute year after year.
Right.
And whatnot. So great. Thank you. I again want to thank you, all three of you, for coming back and talking with us. And I know it's kind of spur of the moment to a degree, and but to come back with the information and answering the questions that the council had. And I guess I would just have a comment to our council. And I mean, you guys have heard me comment about the health district numerous times, sometimes weekly, about possibly funding, what degree the services, and so forth. And so, it is getting down to crunch time. I mean, obviously, we're talking our budget. Mm-hmm. Health districts doing the same thing, talking their budget. You saw the scenarios, or the potential scenarios there. So, I would actually encourage all of us up here to take a serious look at this and give it some very serious consideration very quickly, so that we can at least provide some guidance to our health district. I think public health is extremely important to our community. If we're going to bolster a fun and safe and healthy community, mm-hmm. we do need our health district behind us to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks. Can you go back a couple slides? I think it's page 4. Has the declining there? There you go. Could you describe exactly the numbers on the left? 4 million, the 2 million. Because I'm looking at this and everything looks negative to me. So.
Again, this was based on our 2016 budget, factoring in status quo, so all the positions filled that we have currently, as well as the full capital improvements. So based on that, when you factor our working capital and reserves, the dollars in those boxes are what do we have at the end of the year. So in 2016, we have about $1.8 million in available fund balance at the end of the year. Stepping through each of those scenarios, and this was Councilmember Rasmussen's question of what are the different scenarios if we don't get the full per capita. So we looked at, so you'll see the very bottom line, the black line is nothing if we get zero per capita and keep operating as is. We go into deficit spending in 2017. And then looking at if we got the full $2 per capita from all the cities as well as the county, that's the very top line. And that buys us a couple years before we start going into the red.
Okay, so I was reading it correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, that was
my concern.
And again,
we haven't adjusted. Once you get a preliminary budget out with the board next week, we'll be updating the models, but there was a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. I definitely want to do what we can to help. My concern is looking at that. And... I don't like the idea of just, let's do our part, and then 3 years from now, or even next year, it's still looking as bleak as it is right now. I mean, you're giving us a pretty honest, bleak report right now. So my concern, if I'm concerned about that, are all the other cities going to be concerned about that? And I hate for Monroe to do our part, and we're one of, a few that do and the rest don't, and whose responsibility is this to fix this mess? That's my question. Because I don't feel it's just, even the $2, that's great, but what's going to happen next year and the year after that? So that's the conflict I'm dealing with right now. Yeah. So, to that point, without having some sort of formal funding mechanism, like them being a district where they're their own taxing authority, it is incumbent upon the cities to consider whether or not they're going to step up and be part of that solution. I know the city of Snohomish has done that, and a couple other cities have, and as I told you all last week, and I'm just so that you all know, an ask was made of me to sign on to a letter saying that I was going to propose only a dollar per capita, and I chose not to do that. I value the service that you all provide, and as cities begin to step up, unfortunately, yeah, you're right, it is just voluntary right now. So, but those cities that want to participate, like if Monroe, if the council decides to do this, we can be leaders to help fill that gap. I do have a couple of questions. I served on council back in 08, 09, somewhere in there. I left and forgot exactly when. And right about that time when the economy was dropping, the health district came in and was giving a similar pitch where they, the health district, your predecessors, wanted to have the cities pitch in funding. And that ended up going away. Was that because the county was able to supplant money to help keep you liquid or balanced for the last few years, and that supplanting is now going away because the state allowed for that during the recession?
Yeah, I can get to a certain point. So actually, we were one of the first health districts to institute a city-county partnership in 1966.
Okay.
And over the next 25 or so years, most of the cities and towns in the county were paying per capita. That went away with the NVET because that was supposed to be a dedicated funding source towards public health. But then the funding was, with Tim Island's initiative, it was swept or taken away. The state supplanted some of the funds, but then those eventually went away as well. So the city contributions went away when NVET took over.
Up until the early 90s. Cities were per capita basis, Heather noted, and then that responsibility was shifted to the counties across the state. And with it, a portion of your city MVET dollars went to the county, but it was only 90% of the total cost. So they only got 90% of the money to fund public health at the 100% level. So you're already at kind of a deficit. And then from that point forward, as we got into the 2000s, when we had the NVET completely eliminated, then that threw everything kind of in a wrench, where there was some backfill from the state legislature, but again, not dollar for dollar, and not being increased for inflation. So you're trying to catch up from the mid-90s, let alone from the 2000s when NVET was swept. So that's been building, and we are not unique. I want to reassure you, maybe it's not a warm reassurance, but we are not alone as a local health jurisdiction across the state facing these circumstances. So now in the mid or later 2000s, and this was predated me, as I understand, there was even an emergency loan that was pursued by the county. We were almost in the throes of an emergency loan, and papers were drawn up on how that would work, and I'm trying to recall what prevented that from actually happening. I'm thinking H1N1.
We had to go through 2009. A bunch of money came in for H1N1,
right,
from the feds, and a lot of staff at the local public health level got repurposed into the H1N1 response.
So there was kind of this plantation opportunity that came through the unfortunate circumstance of H1N1,
yeah,
which I think stemmed this need for an emergency loan.
But then that money went away, and in the next couple of years or so, it grew up.
That's where you've seen the precipitous decline in our staff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this has been shared. So point of reference, Tacoma Pierce is about the same population as Snohomish. They have 220 employees for public health. We currently have 143.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to eliminate another 18, we'd be fewer than that. So mm-hmm. we're doing a lot, a little.
Okay. And so going back to what Councilmember Hanford had asked, the left side of the chart here, the y-axis isn't labeled. Are you saying that that's the ending fund balance?
Correct.
Okay. And so the diagram that we're seeing there, the lines represent if all of your FTEs are actually occupied, they're not vacant. And do you have vacant FTEs right now?
We currently have about 10 or 11 FTEs, and so that's one thing that we're looking at and we'll be discussing with our budget advocate.
Okay. So this assumes full funding of FTEs, including those that are vacant right now, and this assumes also that you are fully funding facility improvements that are probably in much-needed state. So while you're looking at a downward spiraling graph there, these are things you're probably putting off today, and if you were to remove those graphs would be better in the out years, especially if there were a per capita participation from each of the cities.
Right.
So while this paints a dire picture, you're already controlling your costs so that it probably will not do what we're looking at on the screen.
Right.
We've been in, I think, a constant motion of doing just that and managing vacancies thoughtfully and carefully. Mm-hmm. The deferred maintenance issue is very troubling mm-hmm. for us. I don't think we'll be looking at a full $4 million investment in the building, although that is subject to a lot more conversation. It really depends on the disposition of the building itself and what ultimate the board may decide. But we know we have immediate issues that have got to be addressed relative to capital repair and improvement. We're trying to dial in exactly where that number is. We, you know, Band-Aid approach, as Heather notes, less than $4 million, but we're trying to dial in what is that number, and then that obviously aggravates kind of the bottom line here.
Okay. I know that everybody's read the budget and understands that it's not in there, but based on the last meeting that we had and we were working on the budget, I didn't feel that I had clear direction to add that into the budget, and so it's not in the budget right now. If that's something that council would like added to the budget, then it would just be a simple motion for direction, and it's something that we can add to the budget. I know a resolution was brought forward. Certainly, you know, whether it's tonight or it's when we don't meet next week, you know, the week after, if council wants, you can go ahead and request that be added to the budget. I'll work with staff to identify that. Lastly, they ask us $2 per capita. We have about 2,500 people that are counted as part of our population. They're in the Department of Corrections up on the Hill. Are you anticipating $2 per capita, including those that reside in the prison?
Apparently not voters, right?
Well, do you provide health services to them? And I guess is where I'm going.
I believe the state goes into the penitentiary if there's any significant issues. However, we could be called in for a response.
We have, in my short tenure, we have been activated to assist. I'm trying to remember what the circumstances
were. There was a white powder that we had to investigate. So there are not a direct inmate service. But there are situations where we should
be involved in that. Just because of our local expertise. Yeah, right. I mean, if there's a communicable disease that's diagnosed on one of the inmates, we're going to be notified because they're residents of Orange County.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Just a quick comment in regards to your concerns, Councilmember Hanford. Very valid, very legitimate, and actually the first time I saw this chart in its early stages, I had the same thing. And, you know, I think I commented up here that I didn't necessarily want to contribute money knowing that it was still going to be negative at the end. But after discussing with Pete quite a bit and understanding that there's many different scenarios playing involved, more importantly, you know, this is just assuming, or the scenarios are just off of a 2017 contribution from all the cities, counties, you know, depending on the scenarios. Being on the Board of Health and talking to the other Board of Health members, we all have a collective understanding that, you know, this isn't just a 2016-17 conversation. It's going to be a conversation that continues on, and we continue this conversation as the years go on. So just like we do with our own city funding. So getting the feelings from, or the feedback from the other board members and the feedback that they're getting from their cities, and after talking with Pete and the rest of his staff, for me, I've become less concerned about that. Still an eye opener, but it makes more sense and brings me a little bit more comfort. So mm-hmm. hopefully you as well. But I think this is definitely important enough, and I would certainly like to have it brought into the agenda, or I'm sorry, into the considered in the budget to be discussed 2 weeks from now?
Oh, no. Yeah, so if there's consensus, we can I can go ahead and ask staff to go ahead and prepare it as part of the amendments for the budget. If you want, you can take more formal action. Is there consensus to add this to the budget? Okay, I'm seeing head nods. Is there any objection to me adding $2 per capita to the 2017 budget?
No.
Okay, I see no objections, so we'll go ahead and work with staff to do an amendment to our budget to include what I calculate to be about $36,600, give or take, to the budget. And I'll also work with staff to find out what sort of details there would be. The one thing, I noticed that you were talking about an ILA for additional services again, and I think, I just want to look at council, is the intent here to get additional services or to pay for the services that they're already providing that they don't have adequate funding for? Because it's a different, to me it's a different conversation if we're talking about additional services in an ILA versus paying the bill for the services that are already being done but there's not enough funding to support.
Well, you mentioned
Member Cutterback. Go for it.
Formal. You mentioned that briefly about the ILA and doing it separately with each community. So how would that work?
Yeah. And so what we haven't done is design a one-size-fits-all
right.
Program for each community.
Right.
What I would recommend actually is both. I mean, something where you're acknowledging that public health is a shared responsibility and cities and the county and the state should all fund it, but also there are things that are specific to the city of Monroe that you would like to for us to engage with you on and work on and solve.
The one thing that I would note is that I think there's value to those entities, those agencies that are paying in voluntarily as part of the board. And I know that there's been some sort of governance study that I haven't had an opportunity to review yet, but I certainly would be supportive of those cities that are paying in voluntarily to have a little bit more voice at the table when it comes time for decision making. I suspect council, I see head nods there, so that would be something that I would find of interest in some sort of ILA or just some sort of MOU or whatever the formal mechanism is.
If it would be helpful, we've also run some data on city-specific information, so mm-hmm. we can run that for Monroe. Gives you look at your immunization rates, your food inspections, COVID permits over here in Monroe, daycares, the training you've done, especially transit inspections, a variety of things. So you get a snapshot mm-hmm. of what it looks like in Monroe.
Okay.
Make sure that with you.
All right, so I think what you can take back to the board, actually what you can take back to the board is that council will be considering it as part of the budget and that there seems to be at least a consensus to add it for consideration in the budget.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the city council on any issue related to the city of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet, and public comment is limited to 3 minutes per person, and nobody has signed up. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the city council this evening? Anybody at all? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Well, I have a motion to wow, I need some water or something. I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Rasmussen,
yeah.
A second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes 5-0. And for the record, I did receive communication from Councilmember Camp. He's not going to be here this evening, so without objection, we'll consider him excused. I need water. All right. No, I don't want to hold people up. Okay, the next item on the agenda this evening is new business item number one. This is AB 16-148, ordinance number 019-2016, authorizing water and sewer revenue and refunding bonds. This is up for first reading. Ms. Nelson.
I loaded this on the computer yesterday and it's not here now. okay, let me just quick go grab the USB I have on. Change the computer. was like, okay, my
cool, thanks.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Brad.
This is regarding a new bond issue that we're going to be doing, and it's actually two bonds issuances. One's a refunding and one is a new issue. Tonight we have with us Nancy Neris, who's our bond counsel, and Dave Trixer, who is our bond underwriter. And Dave, do you want to do the presentation?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening, Mayor and Council. For the record, I'm Dave Tragus, our Managing Director of D.A. Davidson. I've had the pleasure of working with the city many years on bond financings. And as Diane mentioned, this is a two-part proposal tonight. And the reason we're actually separating them into two bond issues is because the federal government gives a tax incentive to issue less than $10 million of bonds in a calendar year. And so our proposal is to issue some of the bonds and close late this year, and then the balance of the bonds close in early 2017. That will provide the lowest interest rate and the best savings on the bond issue. This is just a little history of interest rates. It is a seven-year history. And see on the far right, we actually hit the lowest point in record-keeping for bond rates right after the Brexit in June. And in early July, interest rates are at their very lowest, and this is just a benchmark of rates. So tonight before you, and Nancy will be talking about this, is the bond ordinance, which is the action item proposed for final reading in a couple weeks. It's a delegation bond ordinance, and it's similar to other ordinances that you've considered for bonds before. It allows flexibility to price the bonds at a given time in the future once we meet certain parameters that are outlined in the resolution. And these are the general parameters. We can issue no more than $10 million of bonds this year. And for refunding, 6.7 is the par amount for the new money piece. We have a true interest cost maximum, final maturity maximums, other interest rate maximums, pricing. And I'll note that in number six, we have to meet a certain minimum savings goal on the refunding, else it cannot occur. And that is designated as 4% present value savings. And importantly, this is the action item for the council. It delegates to the finance director and the city administrator the ability to finalize all terms and conditions. A lot of numbers I'm going to go over. I'm just going to hit some highlights, and I have hard copies if anybody wants those as well. But this is the refunding piece. You'll see in the far right, $10 million is the maximum amount. And we are refunding two series of bonds, portions of your 2009 and 2011 water sewer bonds for debt service savings. The interest rates on the new bonds, if you look under the yield column, which is about the fourth column over, they vary from estimated from 0.88 to 2.4%, yield to maturity of 2.8%. Your old bonds that we're refunding have interest rates of 4 to 5%. So we're about a point and a half lower in rates, and that's what generates the savings on the refunding. And then the second column from the right, these are the estimated savings per year, anywhere from $48,000 to $39,000, a total of about $660,000 over the life. Present value benefit, as noted at the bottom, north of $580,000. Now, this was a snapshot as of last week, and we can't price these bonds for a number of weeks because we've got to go through the rating process and the disclosure process. So if for whatever reason savings goes down below our target rate, then this refunding will have to be put on the back burner until we can at least meet the savings goal. This shows, under the interest rate column, the third column, shows the interest rates on the old bonds being refunded. I mentioned the 5%, 4%, 4.75%, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Total of $9.89 million of old bonds. Now for the new money piece. We've been asked to structure a new money bond issue. And you'll see under the uses, first line there, project fund deposit, $6 million. So that's the proposed net proceeds to the city at bond closing for the projects that are listed in your new money portions. The rest, we're required to fund a reserve account for the bonds under your parity bond ordinance and pay cost of issuance. The interest rates for the new money bonds are very similar to those that we described for the refunding. I'll add that the city is a very strong credit. You have an outstanding AA rating from Standard & Poor's, which allows for the marketing of the bonds to a broad group of investors at low interest rates. We'll be going through that process with S&P over the next couple of weeks. The debt service on the new bonds, the generating $6 million, you can see on the far right, this is the estimate for how much the debt service will be each year going forward, a little north of $400,000 for the new bonds. Our schedule. As you can see by the schedule, we've already moving down the path. We have our first reading tonight. We then get into having a discussion with Standard & Poor's next week, hopefully, coming back to the council on the 15th for final consideration of the ordinance, and then moving into the actual pricing of bonds and closing of bonds, whether it be later in December or in early January. There are a number of players involved in a bond financing. Here's the list of the finance team as it currently stands with the city, my team at D.A. Davidson, my counsel at Kutak Rock, your bond counsel, Nancy, who's here, and the paying agent, which is designated by the state, U.S. Bank. And that's all I have. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have about the numbers, the process, before I introduce Nancy to talk about the delegation bond ordinance.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
So I saw briefly on there, but what is the cost of doing this? What's right. The cost of, I don't know what you call it, if you call it repurposing the old bonds,
right,
and then the issuance of the new bonds? What's the cost for each?
Right. Okay. So this is the refunding piece.
Right.
And these are conservative numbers. They'll be actually less than this. But as you can see under the lower part, it says cost of issuance on the far right, about $60,000. And then underwriter's cost of $70,000. So your savings, which are noted on the following page, right there, the $660,000, those costs are net of all upfront costs.
Okay.
Because we've included it in the bond par size.
Okay.
But that's the estimate for the refunding piece, for the new money piece. Again, this is conservative. These numbers will be less than this. We have listed $50,000 for the new money piece for cost of issuance, and underwriter's discount of $40,000.
And then if you can go back to the slide that shows the interest for the new money, what interest we're going to be paying on that $6 million or $6.7 million. There was an interest calculation, because that's what we're paying on taking out the bond.
Right, yeah.
So what's the cost of that?
Right. Okay, so if you look under the yield column, bonds are broken down by maturity. They're sold by individual maturity. This is going to be a 20-year fixed-rate financing. And the interest rate on some of the bonds varies from 0.88 to, see that, 2.65 on the bottom, and then the yield to maturity of 3.2. If you blended all those together, you're looking at it like you hear about the term APR in the mortgage business. Your average cost to borrow would be less than 3% fixed rate for the new money piece.
Okay.
In today's market. Again, we're not going to price those bonds until December. Interest rates could change between now and then.
Right. But based on this scenario, what's the number? Like, what's that dollar amount we're going to be paying for interest?
Well, over the life of the bond?
Yeah, you had it. I thought you had it somewhere where I saw it. There it was.
Yeah. Okay, so on the new money piece.
Yes, on the new money.
If you issue $5.83 million, you can see if you paid the bonds to maturity, that interest rate, you'd be paying $2.6 million in interest over the life.
Right.
You could pay them off early and substantially reduce that if you wanted to, or refinance them potentially down the road. But if you keep them to maturity, that's what you'd be paying.
Okay.
It's
so
a level of total payment of about $420,000 per year.
So for borrowing $6.7 million, we're going to be paying about $2.6 if we do it to the full
maturity.
Time. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of one thing if you go to this source of news is you'll see you're borrowing $5.83 million.
Yeah.
The bond investors in today's world pay a premium for the bonds. In other words, they give you more than the face amount that you'll pay back. And so that's roughly $690,000. So we can issue less bonds in today's world than the amount that you're actually going to get to your project fund. So you're issuing $5.83 million, but you're getting $6 million mm-hmm. to your project fund.
Any other questions from council? All right. You had another person to speak.
Nancy is here to answer questions. She doesn't have a formal presentation. I think Dave's numbers cover it really well. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions at all regarding this, we're actually saving money on the issuance costs by combining these rather than doing
right.
separate financing. So we're saving on their fees.
Well, and it's smart to do some in 2016, some in 2017. I got that, so
yeah.
That makes sense. With the tax credit, is what you mentioned?
Yeah, it's called the bank qualification designation,
yeah.
And because of that, community banks get to deduct a portion of the cost if they buy these bonds into their inventory. That equates to about 20 basis points, 0.2%. So instead of 3.2%, it'd be 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we structure it this way.
Okay. And I have one more question.
You got the floor still.
Okay. Diane, by doing this new money bond, does it impact us getting another project funded or looking at, you know, in the future? Because I know we must have a capacity.
The comp plan calls for stormwater issuing some bonds.
Okay.
All the... Brad, you may want to chime in after I say this. All the utilities have long-term projects. They don't have specific years. They have ranges of years.
Right.
And so, depending on the money, Brad and his team makes determinations what projects to do at what times.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're following the comp plan financing-wise. What we decide to spend the money on, which projects, council at any time can say we don't agree with what you staff is doing.
Right.
And so we're not necessarily saying no, we're not going to do this project because of this. It's just timing. We're deciding, okay, we're going to do this project now. That means that now we're not going to do another project because our staff can only do so many projects at a time.
Mm-hmm.
We're not giving up anything, if that's what you're asking.
Well, I was just asking about the capacity we have to borrow money. You know, like,
okay.
is borrowing this new money, hey, the reissuance, or what did you call it, the refunding of the old debt makes complete sense to me, because we're saving money on that, and interest rates are so much cheaper now. But it's the issuance of the new bond and spending $2+ million on borrowing $6 million, and does that affect our debt capacity on other projects that might come forward, or...
Not governmental projects.
Okay.
This is strictly utility driven, and this is backed by the utility rates. We have the opportunity to raise rates at any time, or conversely lower rates, but to raise rates at any time to meet our financial obligations. There's not really a statutory limit for the utilities. It's what they fiscally can bear and still maintain a good rate.
That's true.
Yeah.
So if you issue council-matic bonds, full faith and credit, they're limited to 1.5% of your tax base. But being utility revenue bonds, it's really a function of two things. One, you have to have the cash flow to pay them back.
Right.
And you're promising your existing revenue bond holders that you're going to meet a certain cash flow coverage for both the bonds that have been in existence and the ones that you issue in the future.
Right.
So we have to demonstrate that. The good news from the utility's perspective is it's been generating good cash flow. If you decide to issue future parity bonds in 2018 or 20, then you'll need to demonstrate that you'll have the cash flow to pay back, the annual debt service of those bonds, and provide a reasonable cushion to maintain your good credit rating.
Right. So to pay back this new money bond, is there anything in your calculations that look over the next few years that we would have to raise rates?
Well, the rate study that we did took this debt issuance
already into effect.
And it does call for a 4% rate increase for the next few years for storm and 7.5% increase for water. The rate study took all of this into account.
Okay. And in those increases, it included this new money that we'd be getting. Okay. That's it for now. Thanks.
Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Nelson?
That's it.
Council members, is there a motion? Okay, I don't see a motion. Would you like this brought back in 2 weeks?
Does that affect the timing?
If rates go up,
we're SOL. The reason we're doing it now is because we want to take advantage of the low interest rates. Yeah. That's funny. Okay, so the motion that is presented for council's consideration is to accept as first reading this ordinance, which means it would be coming back to you for a final decision.
Yeah.
Councilmember Rasmussen?
I'll make a motion to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 019-2016 an ordinance authorizing the issuance and sale of two or more series of water and sewer revenue and refunding bonds of the city in aggregate principal amount of not to exceed $60,700,000 to provide funds to refund certain outstanding water and sewer bonds of the city and make improvements to the water, sewer, and stormwater management systems of the city, fixing or setting parameters with respect to certain terms and covenants of each series of the bonds, appointing the city's designated representative to approve the final terms of the sale of each series of the bonds, and providing for other related matters.
Second.
Okay, first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis for the requested action as identified in Agenda Bill 16-148.
I think you should repeat it.
I can do that. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. All right, next item on the agenda this evening is new business item number 2. This is AB 16-149, discussion on proposed amendment to the 2017 legislative priority. All right. Yeah, I'm opening it up. Sorry. I think I'm on for this one. Yes. Okay. So we have legislative priorities that the council adopted back in early August. Over the last couple of months, we've been talking about issues of lack of treatment programs, including beds for people with chemical dependency, mental health, and behavioral health and homelessness issues. And it's become readily apparent to me that one of the largest problems we have involves resources at the state and federal level, that we need to have more beds where people can be treated. Right now, except for the beds where you have to be incarcerated to use them, at about 32 at the jail, I'm understanding that there are only 16 in Snohomish County. And so what I'm recognizing is that we can't alone as a city take care of the issues of drugs, homelessness, and mental and behavioral health issues, and that we really need to include the state. And as a result, I have requested that this be brought before council today for your consideration to update the legislative priorities to include something about treatment programs, and the proposed language is what you see there in the material. So, questions? questions? Councilmember Rasmussen.
No questions, but I'll move to amend the 2017 legislative priorities to add treatment programs under the policy fiscal issues with the description as proposed.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford move to amend the 2017 legislative priorities to add treatment programs under the policy fiscal issues with the description as proposed. And I want to acknowledge that we do have Mr. Wall here from Greenlight Strategies. Did you want to come up and say any words about what they're doing on the state level about this? I'm sorry for not inviting you up earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council Members. I'm Brian Wall with Greenlight Strategies, your city lobbyist. This is an important issue, a growing epidemic throughout the county, certainly even the state. So I appreciate you considering this this issue and adding it to the agenda. Did want to, and I don't know if Gene had a chance to talk to the mayor. I know this is kind of all happening very quickly. One suggestion I'd have, and I don't, is the language I think looks very good. I would suggest that we change the title from treatment programs to affordable housing or homelessness.
Yeah.
Mainly because that's the key buzzword that everybody's talking about right now. It is important that that we coordinate all of these services as we're learning through this process and what's going on out there and we're facing in the county and throughout the state is there's a lot of different piecemeal programs that are trying to affect change, working separately, and what we need to be doing and what we're starting to work toward is coordinating those services so we're addressing treatment programs, homelessness issues, affordable housing issues, and you know, mental health, and all the other challenges that we're facing society, working together. And so that said, treatment programs is an important piece of it, but the buzzword that everybody's kind of working towards and facing or addressing at the legislative level is homelessness. And that's where a lot of the attention is going. And so I just encourage you to include the language, but maybe amend the topic heading to that area.
Okay, so we haven't had an opportunity to discuss this. So one of the concerns I have, and speak freely, one of the concerns that I have about calling it affordable housing and homelessness is that people with chemical dependency, mental health, and behavioral health issues are not necessarily homeless. And the reason why, when the language was brought forward with that, I requested to make a change, and maybe treatment programs isn't the right title, is that I don't want to assume that every homeless person is homeless because of drugs, mental health, or behavioral health issues. So I would prefer to have some sort of a title for it that doesn't just automatically assume that a homeless person is there because of drugs.
Sure. Then let me suggest, and this is the, so I'm looking at the Association of Washington Cities fact sheet on this issue, and so much county cities has similar language. Their title is Homelessness, Housing, and Human Services. Mm-hmm. So maybe that would be addresses the issue that you're raising. But if we use the term Human Services to broaden the category beyond...
I'm okay with broadening the category. I just think that it's imperative that we don't equate homelessness to being on drugs or... You know, that's my big thing. So if the council feels that adding the word human services is a way to broaden the topic, that's fine with me. But again, I think it's important that we recognize that these can be related, but certainly not always connected issues. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, I like the wording in the cover sheet where it says homelessness, affordable housing, could say human services, and it says support and enhance actions to increase affordable housing, decrease homelessness, and improve a strained mental and behavioral health system. It doesn't tie homelessness to that, but it says those are the key areas that we want to work on. I think if we do that, it also shows coordination amongst, you know, the cities and the county and all of that. So I think it addresses what you're talking about. It doesn't tie it to that. There's aspects of behavioral health that we want funding and coordination in affordable housing, in homelessness. And so I like that language in there. I think if we keep it treatment programs, that might even be too specific. And so but I hear what you're trying to say of not tie it directly and...
I like the language, you know, you're pointing that out. I like the language that I see in that paragraph. My only ask would be this, that because people will latch on to the first word that they see, I would respectfully request that the words improve a strained mental and behavioral health system perhaps be moved closer to the beginning of those three, the affordable housing, decreased homelessness, and improve a strained mental and behavioral health system. I'm concerned that everybody, you know, going back to when I was on council, when I was doing planning in the 90s, affordable housing is a big buzzword. Decreased homelessness is something that is sort of semi-new. I think that the big issue that I'm noticing in this county is a lack of treatment facilities for mental and behavioral health. So that would be my only respectful request, is maybe consider switching that for affordable housing or decreased homelessness or something, just so that it's a little bit more to the forefront. But there is a motion on the floor. Okay, so
amend it.
Well, let's go ahead and vote on the motion. Let it fail. That's fine. And then let's go ahead and make a new motion, because I think that's what Liz would prefer, right?
You can.
Okay. So do you want to withdraw the motion then?
Yeah, I'll withdraw the motion.
I think we can withdraw.
Can we?
I think technically we're supposed to vote on it, because that's probably what I'll hear tomorrow.
All right. Let's amend it.
So let's go ahead and call for the question, vote on it. I'll understand that it fails, and then you can come back with a subsequent motion. So
amend it.
All those in favor say aye. Okay, all opposed? Okay.
Aye.
What was the motion?
The motion was to adopt the legislative authorities as presented.
I think Councilmember Rasmussen was trying to do something.
Okay, did you want to withdraw the motion?
I was going to amend it.
Okay. It's a completely different motion. That's the only reason why I'm saying be amended.
So. There's a vote on the floor.
Let's go ahead and kill it. Okay, all in favor of the motion say aye. Crickets? Okay, good. All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion fails 5-0, which we expected. All right, a new motion. It's like Star Wars, A New Hope. Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen.
I will move to amend 2017 legislative priorities to... All right. Sorry, it's not coming to me exactly how.
It's right here, but you can put like this first or something.
To support and improve a strained mental health and behavioral health system and homelessness affordable housing item as priority and utilizes similar language or enhance actions to increase affordable housing and decrease homelessness. Yes?
Okay, did I understand that the motion is to add to the legislative priorities support and improve a strained and mental health and behavioral health system and enhance actions to increase affordable housing and decrease homelessness. Okay. With a subtitle that would be suitable to be presented. Okay, so is that your motion?
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Did we get that, Liz?
I will on the playback.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you all very much. Thank you,
Thanks,
Mr.
Brian.
White.
Thank you. Great to see you all again.
You too. Okay. Next item on the agenda this evening we have is new business item number 3. This is AB 16150, ordinance number 020-2016, amending the MMC 6.08 garbage collection and disposal, first reading, and authorize the mayor to sign the comprehensive garbage recycles and yard debris collection contract. And is this Mr. Feilberg?
Sir.
Game 7.
Go for it.
Is this Richard Parker? After we've been talking this about these upcoming expiration of the solid waste contract we currently have with Rubanco and /Republic, Council, in September 13th, directed the mayor and staff to bring forward a final contract for solid waste services with Republic Services and associated code changes. One of the things we're doing is eliminating the current solid waste / garbage utility that we currently operate and going into a contract service with Republic. The highlights of the contract include all the customer service will be provided by Republic Services. There's approximately a 1% decrease in most of the fees. However, it ends up with 884 customers, more or less, actually having an increased fee ranging from about 6 cents to $30 for one customer. If somebody who has a large dumpster with multiple times per week, it actually ended up costing them more per month. The majority of customers, over 1,700 of them, will have a 26% per month reduction in their bills. The annual centralized cleanup that we've been holding for the last few years up at the Monroe High School will continue being operated by Republic Services. They will spend up to $30,000 per year doing that. If it ends up costing more than that, then we'll need to discuss that with the city, and Republic will get together to discuss whether that expands or the city contributes some money to that. They will pick up empty litter receptacles downtown once a week. They'll have municipal facilities collection is included in the contract at no additional cost. There's a provision for after 6 months for us to talk about the recycling rates based on what the current market is for recyclables. Termination is 3-year rolling termination. After the first 2 years, we give 3 years notice and the contract can terminate. We will still be collecting the 6% administrative fee. Currently, most of that money goes to the street fund. And then the collection following the work stoppage will be the next work day after resumption or 5 days, whichever occurs first. And the annual rate adjustment changes right now is called, it's part of the RRI, which is the refuse rate index. It will be switching to the consumer price index water and sewer and trash collection. And that is different than just the normal CIP that you use, CPI, that you usually heard talk about on the news or things about the inflation rate. This is actually a subset of that, which actually is usually a little bit more than just the overall CPI. That's basically the summary of the contract, and then in the Monroe Municipal Code, the changes will dissolve the solid waste utility, renew references to solid waste and recycling utility payments. Right now in the water and sewer sections, it talks about how your utility bill is divvied up so that the last thing is paid is the water, so if you don't pay your utility, your garbage portion, we can shut your water off. And then it also adjusts the definitions to match what's in the proposed contract, so we're kind of all talking about the same thing. I may have to go through one more time to make sure that all the definitions actually match, so the final contract actually complies with our city ordinances. One thing will happen now that Republic Services is collecting all the fees from the customers, we will be getting a little bit more in the admin fee because it'll be off of the entire bill that the customers pay rather than just the portion that went to Republic Services. So we're looking at around $12,000 extra per year in that. And then the other one is currently the utility, the solid waste utility is paying for internal service funds and admin fees, about $71,000 a year. And that will no longer be coming from the garbage rates. It'll have to be divvied up amongst the other funds, mostly from water, sewer, and storm. And we hope to have this all wrapped up by the middle of the month so that the contract can take effect on January 1st. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Thank you very much. Councilmember Scarborough.
I'm not sure what all I just heard. But I remember when we talked about it at the Legislative Affairs Committee meeting, we talked about the 1% reduction. We talked about billing coming from two different places, one from the refuge and one from the city, water, refuge. Did I hear a bunch of increases because of that in your your presentation.
Another
thing we talked about when we were in that committee meeting, we talked about picking up downtown garbage twice a week, and I heard you say once. Did we ever get past that?
Your current contract's once a week, right? Yeah, okay.
Understood.
Current contract's once a week. The majority of the rate increases for the individuals, which are, you know, in the under a dollar category for most of them, is due to some strange current billing practices we have now for multiple cans. The proposal that Republic would like to do is actually get people to use larger containers that can be mechanically emptied by the garbage trucks that drive by the pole arm, shoots out, picks up, and dumps it in the bin in the front. So as we work through that, it may turn out that those extra rates go away, because right now, if you have your fourth garbage can, it's a very low rate, which isn't in the current fee proposal. They don't have the fourth can, so we're going to have to use the per can rate, which is a little higher. But if people start using the larger containers, that'll probably go down.
Okay, the people that aren't using the larger containers, do they have to be talked into using a larger container? Or can one be delivered and say, please use this instead of your rubber tote?
I would like to refer to the Republic Service representative. This is Janet Richard.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Janet Richard, Republic Services.
We work out of Linwood to serve you here. We don't want to force anything on anybody. We want to make sure it is their choice, but we also want to make sure that it's the best value for them. And believe it or not, what we found, there are a few people who have their own garbage containers, and they really want to have their own garbage containers. Now, for those who have multiple containers, for example, three, we would like to talk to them, call them, and talk to them about perhaps stepping up just one size. We have a small, medium, and large. So they have three smalls. So instead of going straight to the large, ask them to try the medium, because often you can get a whole lot more. Certainly it's only a little bit bigger, but you can really get a lot more in there. So we want to find a way to make it easier for the customer without forcing them to do something that they just aren't ready to do.
So what I'm understanding is they can have it any way they want it. If they understand, they may have to pay more for the way they want it.
Right.
As opposed to, you might save them money if they use this medium container.
Yeah, we will let them know that.
As long as it's their choice, I can understand it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough, did you have any other questions?
Brad, did you answer my other question? Is that it?
That was it. That was good.
I guess
I think
that
was all.
Okay. Unless something sweeps.
Yeah. All right, Councilmember Cutterback.
I have to tell you, I'm one of those customers that you guys left a little note on my little garbage can saying, you know, you're paying too much for this. You could get a bigger can for what you pay. So I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. I don't know if this question is for Brad, or it's about the admin fees, because I heard you say $12,000 more in admin fees next year. And then I saw approximately 71,000 admin fees of the internal.
Two different kinds of admin fees.
Okay, so can you explain that a little bit more for me?
The admin fee that Republic Services pays to the city.
Okay.
Which is 6% of their revenue. And since their revenue is going to be going up because they're collecting all the money from the customers rather than we collected it and gave most of it to Republic and kept some of it for our own operations, so that will make the amount that they are collecting larger, so we get a little bit more on that. That is different than the admin fee that the solid waste utility pays the city itself for finance operations, you know, that operate with the lights at City Hall.
Oh, I see.
Kind of thing.
Okay, so that's an internal
service funds.
Okay. Yeah. So to go back to the admin fee, the 6%, that's what this is saying right here. It's going from 183 to 195.
Assuming that that's how much, if we assume that people keep the same service they have now.
Right. Okay. Okay, so that leads to my next question, which I was the one who brought up about the mandatory garbage, and when we have people come from our community come speak, and that was one of the questions they brought up. I've been gone, I don't live here, there's no garbage for you to collect, why am I still paying the fee? And I know we have in this, I looked at it, you know, specifying mandatory garbage, so I just want to make sure I understand the contract. The first part is 6.08.010, and that's about the mandatory garbage, and saying it's mandatory in the city. But then I do see under C, it says the city council may, upon a finding that a particular business or residence receives no direct or indirect benefit from the city's solid waste collection contract, exempt such businesses or residents from mandatory requirements of this chapter. So, Brad, can you tell me a little bit more about that and what's the process? And and then is the city still responsible for paying the contract, even if we're telling the resident, you know, that they don't have to pay it because they didn't collect the garbage? Are we still, do we still have to pay it as a city?
That is currently in the code. That's not a change that's proposed.
It's currently in the code that we allow people to come and we can exempt them from
correct.
Paying it.
That's
okay.
Currently in the code. So, to my knowledge, as long as I've been here attending council meetings,
right.
No one's ever done that.
Right.
So, there is no really formal process to do that.
Okay.
And it is not addressed in the contract that. There's no specific provisions in the contract that say everyone will, that the city will guarantee the number of customers that the public has.
Okay. So if somebody does come and muddles through this process of getting an exemption, whatever that looks like, do we as a city owe anything to Republic Services for that gap? Does that make sense?
No, we would not.
Okay,
yeah,
we would not.
Nothing in the contract says that we have to give them money for that.
Okay. All right. That's it.
Can weigh in on that?
Mandatory garbage or not?
No, I understand the need for mandatory garbage. So it's but if somebody is gone for 6 months and it's proven and
there are vacation credits
right.
in the contract.
Okay.
So hopefully there. That will take care of most of the customer needs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I was trying to find in there, you mentioned it, Brad, but I couldn't find it where it says if they have to miss a day because of weather or whatever. And what's the time frame again?
So yeah, if you put them in inclement weather, we will be back the following week to collect double at no extra cost to the customer.
I thought it was something about the next day or the next week, whichever is.
But that is a labor disruption. So if there is a labor disruption, we will then start the next day that we are in operation or on the fifth day or after the fifth day, whichever comes first.
Okay.
So there's two different things. One is inclement weather and one is a labor strike.
So inclement weather, it's automatically just a week later.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is currently what it is now.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that.
Anything further, Councilmember Hanford?
No, thanks.
Okay. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, are there motions? Councilmember Cutterback.
So I will make a motion. Move to accept as first reading ordinance number 020-2016, amending chapter 6.08 MMC garbage collection and disposal, chapter 13.04 MMC water regulation rates and charges, chapter 13.08 MMC sewer system regulations, and chapter 13.32 MMC stormwater management utilities. utility, dissolving the city's solid waste disposal utility, providing for the collection and disposal of solid waste by city-approved contract, authorizing appropriate implementation actions by staff, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cuddeback, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action A, which is in Agenda Bill 16150. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Is there another motion? Councilmember Hanford.
I move to authorize the mayor to sign the comprehensive garbage, recyclables, and yard debris collection contract with Robanco Limited, DBA Republic Services of Linwood, and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford and a second from Councilmember Scarborough for the requested action B in Agenda Bill number 16-150. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
The next item that we have on the agenda this evening is final action number one. This is 816-151, resolution number 017-2016, entitled Parking Regulations. Mr. Feilberg.
Are you going to put something up that shines in my eyes, Brent?
Nope.
Yes, you'd like me to.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to, after reading this, it'd be a lot easier if you had a picture.
Yes, go back to America. Back in 2015, we established the residential parking zone sticker program that was to exempt the downtown residents from the 4/2-hour parking restrictions on the streets listed basically Blakely Hill, Fremont, and Ferry. So that resolution was adopted. And then the Big Daddy John's on Lewis Street asked for a 15-minute parking space out in front of their business. And so we did that a little bit later. And when we did that, we went back to the, we skipped over the resolution that did the parking exemptions and went back to the one before that to make the adoption and make the amendment. And so we actually have two resolutions out there that say the same things that are effective at the time. So this is basically combining them into one, repealing the other two so that there's no confusion on who's supposed to be parking where. So this is not doing anything different than what the council's already approved. It's just putting them into one work resolution so there's no confusion out there. So it does the residential parking zones for the exemptions on the side streets. It does not, the residential parking zone stickers do not apply for any parking on Main Street or Lewis Street. And then this also keeps the addition of the 15-minute parking space in front of Big Daddy John's on Lewis Street. We have found that since there appears to be some confusion about where the stickers apply, some education needs to be done by in both city staff and the people who have the stickers about where they can actually park their cars when those they have their stickers on them. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
This came about as a result of some comments that I heard from a business on Main Street about a couple of vehicles that have been parking out there, and in doing some research, we found this little snafu. So. I thank you very much, staff, for doing the research and bringing this forward. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to approve resolution number 017-2016, establishing parking restrictions in the city of Monroe and repealing resolution numbers 13-2015 and 022-2015.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cuddeback for the requested action in Agenda Bill number 16-151. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. We're going to go ahead down into Councilmember reports. Please note we do have a need for an executive session. Not that affects your reports, but I thought I'd mention that. We do not have any reports from the Human Resources and Finance Committee this evening, so we will go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
The only thing I want to say is thank you to our police department for their work on Lewis Street. I'm sure it's going to be talked about later, but I saw the emails, and especially after the Saturday meeting with the area residents, it was welcome news to hear. So, Chief, thank you to you and your officers and the whole team out there. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, just echo that. Chief, thank you for your leadership and communication as well.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing tonight.
Okay, what's going out to staff? Mr. Osaki.
I have nothing.
Okay. Ms. Nelson.
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Mr. Worthen.
Thank you. Nothing tonight.
Okay. Mr. Feldberg.
Nothing tonight.
All right. Chief.
Just say ditto. Oops.
Chief, can you give an update?
Yeah, as what has been alluded to already, last Friday was a day that...
living infamy.
Pardon me?
The day that we're living infamy.
Well, for some people, it probably will. when we had that meeting... we already knew this was going on, but just didn't want to say anything about it. But we used the SWAT team to help us on it. Because the last time we visited that residence where we had served a warrant, there were 22 people inside. So we used a total of about 40 officers this time. Closed down Lewis Street north and southbound for a little over an hour. I think we did have somewhat of a detour route for the traffic, but we took 16 people out of the residence. Five went directly to the county hotel, and they were charged. The main two occupants, the owner and his significant other, were charged with providing a house for the sale of drugs and the use of illegal narcotics. There will be multiple more charges coming on in the next week or so. Just because we didn't book all 16 doesn't mean there are going to be any charges. We plan on continuing to visit that residence until they decide to discontinue the activity that's going on there. Is there anything else that I'm leaving on the decision?
Are there any other, Council, do you have any questions about Friday? Okay.
When you say continue to, the people get to go back in the house, or they're out on bail, they're, what? Do you think the activity will continue there, so you need to monitor?
Yes, they are out on bail. They have the opportunity to go back in the house. It's their home, and if they allow other individuals into their home, that's certainly their right. But we will be monitoring the situation, and if we have a probable cause to go for a search warrant, we will do that. We will do that weekly until they decide are going to adhere to the laws of the state of Washington and the federal laws too.
Any other questions, Council? Chief, under your leadership, yes, that was amazing. I truly appreciate the work that you did, your officers, the SWAT, and I know that you had a number of other people that were involved in this also, and I commend you for following through on that, and I thank you very much. And it's frustrating that we have different homes, different houses here in town that, you know, where drugs are sold out of, and it's frustrating that we have people that, you know, not everybody that's living, you know, out on the streets and whatnot are addicted to drugs, but it is frustrating that this element is here. It's the reason why drugs are one of the reasons why we have so much petty theft here, vehicle prowls, and things along those lines. And I know that this is something that plagues Snohomish County fairly uniquely in the state. It's something that we need to get under control, both with code enforcement and also with helping people that want to be helped. And sometimes, you know, intervening like this is what you absolutely need to do to hopefully wake people up so they get help. I truly appreciate the work that you did to bring this forward. I know there's still work to go, and we will stay on top of it. So thank you. We also had another thing you might want to report out on. I don't know if we, the cigarettes and the burglaries with the cigarettes.
Yeah,
I think we reported on that last Tuesday.
Last week, but
yeah. Okay,
yeah, you did.
That was last week. Okay,
yeah, the person was charged with multiple counts. We're in the process of interviewing 15 witnesses. We will probably, after that's completed, probably charge him with additional counts of a burglary. Total of seven burglaries in businesses that sold cigarettes and the like. But one thing I forgot to mention last week, that our PROAC team and the officers that were working the evening shifts went around with some of these businesses that were selling cigarettes, and they suggested, and the Shell station took them up on it, to take the cigarettes out of the cartons, and so they just had the packs available there, and makes it more cumbersome for the individual to display. And plus, when they did chase them down through the swamp and the light, they were able to follow the track of Marlboro cigarettes.
And Chief, you also met with Human Services from the county on Thursday or Wednesday last week?
Yeah, Wednesday we met with the people from Human Services and discussion with discussing the need for a part-time social worker out here working in the Monroe community, and it was a good meeting. They told us that they wanted to work with us, and we would split the cost with the county of a social worker out here. And before we add this to an item to the budget, we will come up with the job description that this person will be doing.
So our hope is to have that for you to see as early as 2 weeks from today, since we're not having a meeting next week, because I know that you'd like to chew on it over Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
What a turkey. I'm sorry.
But it's not a turkey.
What's that?
It's not a turkey.
So that was unintentional, believe it or not. Like that, you have an opportunity to look it over Thanksgiving, and when it comes back as part of the budget, we can you'll have some time to review it. We are looking at probably having a placeholder for right now, simply because we don't have a formal contract in place, but at least we have a scope of work. We'll maintain some generality in the event that another entity comes forward that can help provide the service other than Human Services at the county. Does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. The other thing I think I alluded to last week is that one of the sergeants in PD is working on some changes to our code that will help give us more tools in the toolbox to take care of houses that might be involved in the sale of drugs and whatnot. So I know Zach just got back from vacation. I'm sure he'll see the email here sometime this week, but I'm hopeful to have that before the council by December so that we can begin the deliberation on that item also. And then you've got something related to trailers too that'll be coming forward in a couple weeks also.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Any questions for the chief?
Drug house.
Okay. Why don't we come on up here and Mr. Basil.
The only thing I have this evening is last week I sent council an email notifying me that I was a finalist for the City of Lake Stevens, and this morning I accepted the position of City Administrator for the City of Lake Stevens.
Oh,
congratulations.
It's definitely bittersweet. I really love this community and everybody that works here in the council. We've got a great relationship, obviously, and I definitely will miss that. But it's a new opportunity for me to, you know, grow as a administrator. I'm really excited about it. Community's awesome up there as well. You know, they have so many similarities to Monroe here, the way they cherish their community and their youth and the like. So looking forward to that. And I will be here through January 2nd. So I've already started the planning process with the mayor and staff, transitioning me out and somebody new in. So we're working on that, and the mayor will announce what the plan is in the next few days, I'm sure. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
Well deserved.
Yep.
Yeah, and Gene, it's been a true pleasure working with Gene. Council members, we have really wonderful staff here, and I've worked in a lot of different places. I know you all have too. It's like a family here. I mean, it really is. And Gene is core to that. I really value having Gene here. Lake Stevens is going to be really blessed to have him there as their city administrator. And on the one hand, I really want to keep him. On the other hand, I also want him to be able to do new things. And it's going to be a wonderful opportunity. You are going to be missed. And So, in the meantime, he will be gone for 2 weeks, beginning on Friday. So if you've got anything, please make certain you're emailing me, that you'd otherwise be emailing to Gene, just so that I can make certain, if there's something that I need to be aware of, that I'm copied on that. And certainly, the chief for the next couple of weeks until he gets back. All right. So when we go ahead, some real quick reports for me. Had coffee with the mayor on Saturday morning just before the Sky Valley Classic over at the Pilot House. I had, I think, about 8 people show up at this one. So I actually had two or three turnovers on the table. There was a lot, I know this is going to surprise you, about drug houses on Lewis Street and tagging and things like that, because that had just happened the day before. Pretty much by moving around like that and coming to the downtown, the people that came were more interested in sort of downtown things, as opposed to other folks that I've met with, on the Frylands. I get things more related to the Frylands. So a lot of great conversations, and then went and welcomed people to the Sky Valley Classic. A lot of great costumes there, and a lot of energetic people despite a little bit of rain. So thank you to the YMCA for putting that on. Councilmember Cutterback. And then I went to Sherina Bean's. She was open for just one day. She's now leasing the space that used to be Mi Mazatlan, and is going to have a coffee store that is supposed to be really kid-friendly. And so she should be open formally in about a week and a half or so. Also, I took an opportunity to meet with the DMA unexpectedly there, both with Aaron and also Diane Forth, and talked about some of the things that the DMA had going on. Met with BDS, I think, at lunchtime on Friday or Thursday last week, got a preview of this presentation, so that was good. Even though I got his name wrong on the agenda, that was, oops. And then this week, tomorrow, PSRC, I'll be going down tomorrow afternoon for the Economic Development District, and then we'll be working with Gene and senior staff on just transition planning, and that's just some of the things I have going on right now. So any questions for me? All right, let's go ahead and hit the extended agendas and then move on to exec session.
Okay. Draft agenda for November 15th, 2016, the Transportation Benefit District Board agenda.
Okay, so please note that we meet early, half hour earlier.
Okay. We'll be going over the consent agenda and a public hearing. And then under new business, it'll be the approval of the 2017 budget. Again, this is a TBD. Any questions? Draft agenda, November 15th for the Monroe City Council. Under public hearing, it's the 2017 budget, second public hearing. Number two public hearing is the ordinance amending the MMC regarding term limits for elected officials. Under announcements and presentations, we have the confirmation of the Civil Service Commission appointment. The consent agenda, under new business, the lobbyist contract will be discussed. And low impact development first reading. Your final action will be looking at the garbage contract again for the final reading on that, and then council member reports. Is there any items for the P4 that we know of?
Councilmember Rasmussen? Councilmember Rasmussen?
Sorry.
It's okay. No, okay. He waved it off.
Okay.
Anything for P4? Okay. No. Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, just a quick question on the public hearing. Number two, the term limits for elected officials. Is that what we'd ask for
it is.
Before we vote on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've scheduled everything kind of back-to-back to make sure that we have time to try and resolve this issue before the first of the year is kind of our game plan.
Okay, so that's the term limits for elected officials, the public hearing to eliminate the term limits.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
Is there anything council would like specific to, you know, we'll do a public notice in the paper. Is there anything else that council that might be different that council will want on that?
The website?
Website, yep.
The usual.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Councilmember Davis?
Did we have anything for P4 committee next meeting? Since we're having the
TBD,
I think.
Doesn't look like it.
Just cancel that.
Cancel.
All right. Thank you.
That's all I have.
We probably should know whether or not we're going to cancel the November 22nd meeting. Do we need to know that tonight? Okay, so we're saying head nods. Since we don't have a meeting on the 8th, if you are interested in canceling the meeting on November 22nd, which is the week of Thanksgiving, it would be helpful knowing that this evening. Councilmember Hanford?
I move to cancel the business meeting on November 22nd, 2016.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Davis to cancel the November 22nd business meeting. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay, I think we've taken care of the agendas, and we now have a need for an executive session, and I had a sticky note. The executive session is pursuant to RCW 42-3144A.
For purposes of discussing collective bargaining strategy.
Okay, and we will be in executive session initially for 15 minutes. There will be action to follow to at least adjourn the meeting. So, thank you very much. We're in executive.
It's all good. Different
places
strokes.
Do different things.
Different strokes, yeah.
Okay, we're back in regular session. There's no other business this evening for council that we have requested. Is there a motion to adjourn? Councilmember Rasmussen?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.
Congratulations, my friend.